City's Community Radio, KFAI, 90.3 FM in Minneapolis and St. Paul, and streaming and archived at kfai.org. Always a breath of fresh air.
This is a test of the emergency alert system. If this were an actual emergency, the tones you just heard would be followed by information and further instructions. This concludes the test of the emergency alert system.
The viewpoints expressed in this program are the opinions of the people expressing them, and not necessarily those of Fresh Air Incorporated, its staff, or its board of directors.
What's up? This is Toolman.
And this is Bear Witness.
And we are the Hallucination.
And you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
Welcome to Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake, Best Of.
The Hallucination.
They are going to become more brutal.
Couldn't cut, he didn't cut anything.
Because all the hippies were trying to be Indians anyway.
They're going to become more repressive because it's a matter of dollars and their illusionary concepts of power.
Hey, Victor.
We must live in balance with the earth.
And also recent happenings at Wounded Knee.
I am awake.
Welcome to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakunja Hade. Hey, Kadagi, to all my friends and relatives in four directions, you are listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot. Hey, we discuss local, national, Native news and events, and as you know, Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues. Speaking of issues, there's things going on all the time here in our Native community here in the Twin Cities, but all over Turtle Island. And I ran into our friend here, Nikki Love, this past Thursday, and I wanted to get Nikki's insight of what's going on in the community. And she was really open to come on and talk freely about what's happening. Thank you so much for being on Native Roots Radio and speaking your truth. And it's always great to see you.
Yeah, bonjour, Robert. Thank you for having me on. And I know you're the one that's like leading the show. But I was just wondering if you wanted to share on Thursday, what was the capacity that you ran into me? Like, what was happening? We're going under a bridge. Who was there? And yeah,
yeah.
Just all of that. That might be a good place to start too.
Well, Nikki, as everyone maybe or knows or not knows, Nikki, she wrote in The Circle and wrote a great article in The Circle magazine. And as you know, I'm a chief editor without the headdress, so I guess I'm just managing editor. But I was looking for Nikki after this news conference about our relatives on the streets and how the government and the city and people will be dealing with our relatives. And it was very confusing. And I had some extra magazines I wanted to give Nikki. And I found Nikki. Yeah, there it is. The Circle found you down talking to a reporter. And I went down there and listened to what you were saying and followed you underneath a bridge right by where the news conference was. And talking to our relatives, our unhoused relatives, and talking to the reporter about really what's going on. And, you know, we talk about this wouldn't happen in Edina or neighborhoods that other people live in. And our unhoused relatives are struggling, and there's so many different ways. And you were telling their story. So I was eavesdropping on what you were saying.
Yeah, thank you, Robert, and thank you for the opportunity too to write in this newly launched version of the Circle, because it was cathartic for me talking about, I mean, kind of the underpinning of, you know, like, I think the mayor in that press conference, and I'll share a little bit more about that press conference for context for viewers, especially that aren't like totally plugged in and don't live in the Twin Cities, but about this not being a housing issue and it's an addiction issue, and my personal stances. And I love that you put like community activist, because I don't think I am that, but it's like, what do we say? Just like, you know, random lady who cares, or native lady who cares, but right. Cause so many of us have this very direct lived experience, right? Either some of us have come out of addiction and these circumstances, or some of us are just surrounded, enveloped by it in our families, and in our geographies and where we live. And so anyways, but I just, that the root is not even addiction, right? Mm-hmm. I was talking about that, with those, reporters for Care 11. I think one had like an NBC, hat on, yeah. But anyways, and none of that made its way to any airing. In fact, I'll get to that in a bit. No, the voices of Native people from that press conference almost weren't heard at all. It was like right. The mayor and other city leadership were the sound bites, and not much coverage on it whatsoever. But so none of that made its way. So I'm glad that there's a way to uplift and share some of that here. But that the root is identity fracture, all the historical things we've talked about. And so it's silencing people's voices, and they don't know what their identity is. And when you don't know who you are, you don't have agency. And that's where I talk about everywhere. Our people, as we know, are so incredible. They have so much resilience and agency and talent. And it just needs to be activated. Mm. And so to think that we're going to like form all these policies to get us out, form all these like very legalistic based interventions, is like, those legalistic interventions can support what really is community, kinship, and breathing life literally back into people and reminding them. Again, I always talk about, who did Creator make you to be? And it's not what this whole system has said you are supposed to be. How do we create more civically engaged people? How do we create people that are basically what we're saying are wage workers, right?
Mm-hmm.
The systems that be, the goal for them is that we're wage workers.
Yeah.
And that's just incongruent. So I'll say, maybe I'll pause there, Robert, but I can get into next. What was that press conference? What was it supposed to be from the perspective, the Native community's perspective, or at least the Metro Urban Indian Directors, from what I understand, what was it? And then what's needed? I can do that. Next.
Yeah, I'd love to do that. I just got a statement too, that to me the news conference seemed really like, we're gonna take care of these homeless people. They don't want help, so we're gonna make them have help. And it's just like, why aren't we talking about the drug dealers? Why aren't we talking about them instead of our community and what they're gonna do to us? That's kind of the vibe I was like. Okay. Feeling, especially in the middle of it.
Yeah. And that's where I think it was, at least for me, it was a blind side.
Yeah.
And I think some of our MUD leadership was invited to speak right at that event. And some of our MUD leaders, like our Native organizational leaders, asked questions which weren't aired. You didn't hear the answer or response to them. Because it was asking for accountability, but what it was supposed to be was a collaboration where we're talking about it's a complete humanitarian and public health crisis, right? In parts of South Minneapolis, especially in and around Little Earth, what's got attention, media attention, is even like one of the daycares at Little Earth, Baby Space, where a lot of our kids go or our friends' kids go. You could just see it. I had my friends' kids for a few days that week and dropping them off and picking them up. It just was like there were needles everywhere. It was incredibly unsafe. There were people fighting, people not in their right mind. So when we're asking for public safety, though, is not asking for everyone to be criminalized. Right. And so part of the understanding that we had was we have some of our speakers speaking to share the alignment that we don't tolerate traffickers and major dealers in our communities that are preying on our most vulnerable. And a lot of our relatives that are under Cedar Bridge and other places in that area are vulnerable. They're preyed upon, they're trafficked, right? As a part of that addiction cycle, but they're not the major perpetrators of violence, of trafficking and of dealing. So we wanted to start there, is my understanding, but that, you know, what it told me was we as a community need to ask better questions or even ask questions at all. Like, I don't think any of our leaders that were speaking got to see the talking points, the crib sheet, the notes, the strategy of the mayor's office or other Hennepin County sheriff was there, of other leadership, so that what it feels like is that we were used as a cover. See, Native community agrees with this strategy.
Right, exactly. Hey, we are here with Nikki Love, and we're talking about what's happening in our community and how we can speak up, and Nikki's speaking up for us. This is Native Roots Radio, and we'll be right back after this short break. Please stay with us.
To our elders who teach us of our creation and our past, so we may preserve Mother Earth for ancestors yet to come, we are the land.
This is dedicated to our relatives before us, thousands of years ago, and to the 150 million who were exterminated across the Western Hemisphere in the first 400 years' time, starting in 1492.
To those who have kept their homelands and to the nations extinct due to mass slaughter, slavery, deportation, and disease unknown to them, and to the ones who are subjected to the same treatment today.
To the ones who survived the relocations and the ones who died along the way.
To those who carried on traditions and lived strong among their people.
To those who left their communities by force or by choice and through generations no longer know who they are.
To those who search and never find. To those that turn away the so-called non-accepted. To those that bring us together. And to those living outside, keeping touch, the voice for many.
To those that make it back to live and fight the struggles of their people. To those that give up and those who do not care. To those who abuse themselves and others.
This is Robert Pilot. We're with our friend here, Nikki Love, and we're kind of talking about not only what happened this past Thursday at the news conference, and I really like how Nikki framed it, is that we were there to be complicit to what the thoughts of the city and the county and the police want to do in our community. And I really think this is such an important conversation. Nikki, thank you so much for coming on and talking us through this. This is I'll let you take over because I'm still kind of like shocked at what happened and what went down.
Yeah. So we left off with just noting that I think the goals of the Metro Urban Indian directors and other organizational leaders were different from the mayor's office and others who had called the conference together and invited us. And I think what it taught is for us to be much more in tune with what they're going to say. So less of a passive approach. And I think in general, what I noticed, and can speak, right? We got individuals, so this is not me speaking for the whole community, but my understanding, because what I try to do is listen and share back, is that yes, we want big traffickers and big dealers to be held accountable, and we're beyond this point of where there's a public perception that that's wrong or that would be at odds with, like, you know, other governmental leadership, those that are in charge of the public safety of the city. But I think this idea that we want everyone picked up, criminalized, and again, others that you'll see if you're in Facebook land and you see some of our other major voices and activists like Rachel Dion Thunder is one, we'll get more of that understanding and a deeper nuance that we're not saying to criminalize addiction. We are saying that that we want accountability and that we can't normalize what our kids are seeing. And that's one thing that keeps coming up is our kids are seeing this behavior normalized on the ones that live in this community in Little Earth. Is its trajectory is going younger and younger and younger, right? Exponentially. I don't know what the average age of like a Little Earth resident is, but over half of their community is now youth, right? So what are we allowing them to see? And there's ways to do that that are not at odds with, you know, treating our people humanely. And I think what we do is we do the talking points like I'm doing without giving the tangible, specific things that we want, need, and are demanding. But yeah.
Can you tell our audience, because we have people from all over Turtle Island listening, a little bit about a Little Earth and what that community is and what it means to us?
Yeah, so for those that aren't here, Little Earth is not a reservation, an urban reservation, but it kind of feels that way even for some of us that are here. And I am not a Southsider. I moved back to Minneapolis after living at shows that I'm Boys for at Anishinaabe. So my homelands are 4 hours north of here. And I moved from the Vermilion side of the Boys Fort Res back to the Twin Cities. So I am not a resident Southsider, but some of our leaders are. But Little Earth is the largest urban housing development, native housing development in the country. And it has a pretty large population there, hundreds. And it's right in the center right now, epicenter of where the addiction is most visible, right?
Yeah.
You can see it. You can see these tents going up, some of the violent activities, some of these other illegal activities. You can see it from the freeway when you're driving over. But it's a beautiful community. And there's lots of cultural revitalization happening there. There's beautiful things happening there. And the goal is to protect and keep it a safe space so that can continue.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And so, like you said, it's a beautiful space and it's our relatives are living there, but there are also needles and things like that that you said earlier that are really, I like how you put not to normalize what's going on in the community.
Yeah. And that's the dichotomy is like, it's how do you keep the people that are perpetuating this accountable without harming everyone? Because I can't remember who said this, but it was there's a biweekly unsheltered and opiate committee meeting that's held right now at All Nations on Bloomington. Community comes together along with those that are recovery, those that work in peer recovery, those that are representing, like MPD and Hennepin County Police and government officials. So it's like all the full circle of the equation of those that are involved with this are at those meetings and at those tables. But anyways, one of the things that someone brought up at one of those meetings is 100% of the households at Little Earth are affected by opiates or this drug crisis. 100% of households and all of our kids are seeing it, experiencing it, and that the age of use, we've always known there's been intergenerational use in our families, but that it's tracking younger and younger. So, and in other committees within the Metro Urban Indian Directors, we've been talking also about absenteeism and extreme truancy in Minneapolis public schools. Like all of these things are interwoven and interconnected.
Yeah, definitely. If you're fearful to leave your house for whatever reason, if it's happening in the house or happening outside your house, it is a real thing. And, you know, I was a teacher in St. Paul Public Schools and had the first all-native homeroom in St. Paul. And not, you know, everything kind of looks cool on the outside of our young ones, but if you start asking questions, everybody, like you said, is affected by something. And we know, too, just the statistics of 1 out of 3 Native women will be abused one way or the other. And that's, if you're in a powwow and looking at our dancers and doing 1 out of 3, it's very sad and sickening. So we need to talk about this kind of stuff, Nikki.
Yeah, we do. And I think one thing we always talk about, I probably brought it up here years ago on this issue, 3 years ago when we were talking about, right, encampments.
Yeah.
But one thing that's like, no one's in support of encampments even then. And I don't think that that was a really clear understanding 3 years ago, but it is a clear and shared understanding, but that people, there is a safe space that's needed, because this sweeping and shuffling around,
mm-hmm.
well, that's been the response, and people have nowhere to go. It's just, it makes no common sense. And this is where I've said on my own, like, personal live feed on my Facebook page, like, common sense is not the rule of the day right now, which right. is sad. But so that these things could still be happening, and people have brought up specific locales. Some people have said, what about, I think it was under the Shelby Bridge, might have been one. What about the Smith Foundry site? Like, and there could be millions of reasons to not do either of those. People are at odds. There's always going to be an oppositional opinion.
Mm-hmm.
But is there one that has enough collective will, I guess, behind it? Because right now what I'm seeing also is just the inertia. There's an inertia on our side as well. Like, well, just let these ones that are habituated with public speaking speak. And hopefully that the wisdom that comes from the actual on the ground outreach folks, the actual on the ground peer recovery folks, and other activists, on the ground activists, hopefully those opinions find and those talking points and suggestions find their way to a microphone somewhere. But we got to quit hoping and assuming that happens, because it's not fully happening. And I think what the taste that's left in all of our mouths after Thursday's press conference is also that our community has great ideas, but are we in our approach being strategic enough?
Mm-hmm.
So there's a little bit of a passivity. There's a little bit of a not wanting to step on certain people's or organizations or toes, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a, like when you play volleyball, right? When you set it, someone's got to call it. Like,
yeah,
who's calling it? And that we're not giving enough tangible asks. So there are these committees, there are groups where, you know, this multi-jurisdictional task force that's meant to be looking at coordinated responses around this issue, around public safety, that it's not responsive enough. It's not fast enough. And I think there's still this inertia that we have not been emboldened. And I want to just say we should be emboldened to bring our ideas forward, because just backdooring it to another leader, Native or not, obviously it's not working.
Hey, we are here with Nikki Love. Our community activists and in the boots on the ground, and we're really, I'd like to get you on one more segment, maybe talk about solutions of what somebody like me can do, or people listening to the show, and how we can really support our relatives. And I really appreciate you speaking your truth. Can you stay on for one more?
Oh yeah, for sure.
Right on. Hey, this is Native Roots Radio, and we'll be right back after this short break. Please stay with us. Ho-wa.
Support for KFAI comes from the Wienery, proudly serving Chicago-style hot dogs, vegan dogs, and hand-cut french fries. With love on the West Bank for over 40 years.
Hi, I'm Jane Fonda, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. This is Robert Pilot, and we are with our friend Nikki Love, and we're talking about house our relatives that are houseless and what's happening on the streets. And one of the things we really like to do at Native Roots Radio is talk about solutions. And this is so complicated, and there's so many different players involved, whether it's, we always talk about here on Native Roots Radio that the city blames the county, and the county blames the state, and the state blames the city, and nothing gets done. And some of that happens for a reason, and some of it happens because that's the way it's happening. But I really like to talk solutions here, and I know you're an idea person, and you've been in the community and see how it's been working and not working. And let's talk a little bit about solutions. And again, Nikki, thank you so much for stopping in and talking about this this situation that's not only here in the Twin Cities, but it's all over Turtle Island.
Yeah, it's much deeper, like we said, much deeper than a housing issue, much deeper than a drug issue. And I think that's how it needs to be understood in like holistic parts. And one of the things when we were just offline talking about like what do solutions look like, I think one is an anti-solution, I think is what I was talking about, is thinking that the powers that be have the solution. But our community itself, we have people that have incredible expertise. We have people that have the lived experience. We have organizations that have been working on and in these communities for decades. But one thing that's left is there's not, like maybe even said it in an earlier segment, there's someone that needs to hold the strategy. There's someone that needs to help keep the focus. We have amazing organizers. I've seen this and said this many times about like our governmental leadership circling the drain on these issues of public concern for decades. It's because lots of competing priorities, who's championing this? It needs like a quarterback. If you want to think about it, I mentioned that we have lots of talent, and you think about all these people out on the field that have solutions, incredible ideas. But you need a quarterback that's calling the plays, someone that's organizing and kind of being the connective tissue between multiple different groups around our peer recovery folks that are not affiliated with an organization. You need those that are doing outreach that are affiliated with organizations and have different sets of access points and resources. You need those that I have friends that one now has, she's become, just this last week, she started a week ago today, she's working in a diversion program where she used to live at the Wall of Forgotten Natives. She used to live in some of these encampments, and she is now actively working with those that have been arrested in these diversion programs to set them up on a pathway to recovery. But she's also someone, like yesterday, we went to the encampment in St. Paul at Pig's Eye Park. She's also someone that's going to sit with people, pray with people, listen to people. And that's where we learned that in, at least in St. Paul and with Ramsey County, they've shut off emergency assistance. So there are people out there that normally wouldn't have been at Pig's Eye, but because they've completely shut off emergency assistance and said they have absolutely no money for the next 6 to 7 months at least, you're seeing more and more people ending up there. And one of the ladies said, and she was Native, so we have Native people also on the other side of the river with these issues, but she said, yeah, we can't even park our RV somewhere, we'll get towed immediately, we'll get arrested. And there's not like clear pathways, there's not clear resources. And so part of what we hear in this jurisdictional foursquare, at least in the south side, where we work more with Hennepin County, is that there's like no resources, who's in charge, and it's like a fumble. So it's easy for us to point at government and say, quit pointing at each other and fumbling, but respectfully, like, we got to do that too.
Yeah. And so, yeah, I like talking about somebody, the point person or the quarterback to get things done, and also be able to decipher and listen to our boots on the ground and what they're doing. That's a beautiful thing that you said, because I know, like, one of the best things that happened years ago, I've been sober for 41 years, but the drug counselors, when you go to treatment, are sober too. 90% of the time now, and you listen to them because they know what you've gone through. They not only have empathy, but they know what you have gone through, and that gives a person that needs help really a more understanding and a sense of really this person gets it. And so there's a combination of so many things. This is really hard, and I'm glad we're talking about this, Nikki.
Yeah. And it's kind of like, and my sister said this, and she ultimately didn't get out of that cycle. Right. That's what I wrote about that. So I'm not going into that now, but one thing that she says, and I just put it on repeat, the pain of change has to be less than the pain of staying the same. Right. And so one thing that we've noticed is, a lot of people, I mean, this is just me on the sidelines and not speaking for any organization. This is just Nikki. I'm like, okay, so I'm seeing like at the press conference, these people don't want to stand and talk over next to these people because this one thinks they did this and appropriated money in this way. Even while they're supposed to be out like on behalf of unsheltered people, and whether that's true or whether that's just like a misconception, I'm like, and then we got like over here, they think these group of leaders are gatekeepers, and then over here, and it's like, okay, well, so then somewhere we got to have like that one strategic person that can listen and be unaffected by all of it to be able to braid people together, because there's so much common ground, whatever these other things are that are real, and not to say that we shouldn't hold people accountable or have those conversations, but if the central issue is finding a physical place, right, a safe location, a managed location with logistics where, like Travis, who was leads American Indian CDC and was in the press conference, I mean, he said for a long time, his experience is there's a fraction and a percentage of the folks that are ready for treatment, ready to receive services. So we focus all of our attention and resources there, but we're not doing anything to address the ones that truly aren't ready or aren't wanting those services right now. Mm-hmm. And then there's a whole bucket of other things that's more long-term and systemic that address the quality of the services being offered. Because again, the systems, powers that be, need to hear us when we say people are out here that are already have housing, but again, you have someone living 10 miles away from their support systems, doesn't work. You have people that aren't regularly checked in on, doesn't work. You have people that are told to wait for months, and that's happened. I had my sister cuz with me for, I don't know, half a year because no one would open up a bed for her because she's also diabetic. So no one manages that, and no one can manage her, like also the mental health pieces of it. And I'm like, well, if people had perfect mental health, they wouldn't be doing drugs.
Yeah.
Right. They wouldn't be homeless. So it just, then there's again, that whole other bucket of like the services being offered they lack common sense and practice.
Yeah. And do we hire a czar to look over this, to the community, hire somebody like yourself to look over this, or somebody out there that really sees the vision of how we have to really get everybody involved and everyone understanding, whether it's good or bad discussion, and then call people out in a good way about bad discussion, and keep the eye on the prize. Those, all these things that you know, we've done in the past as Native Americans and that we have to revitalize somehow.
Yeah, well, I think it's, I mean, just to keep it real, from my perspective, it's just how much of this is a priority and issue for everyone in our community, not just a handful of a few or those that are dealing with the direct impacts of it. Because for example, like I look at Operation Surge or Metro Surge here, our community came together just like others in the Twin Cities, mobilized mm-hmm. very effectively, mobilized food deliveries. They were able to meet at will, at whim, with not a lot of notice because it was that important. Well, why isn't this that important?
Wow. 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 Yeah. Wow. Really good point. We got like a couple minutes left here. And again, I really, really, really appreciate you stopping in and really talking this through with me. And I feel like I understand more personally about what the plight is and what the situation is and what we need to do and what is being done and what hasn't been done. Nikki, I just want to give you the floor for the last minute and 30 seconds here.
Yeah, I think it's easy to be critical and give a bunch of critiques. So I just want to say that, like with the last minute or two, I just also want to uplift there's a lot of people out there incredibly selflessly and with total open hearts that are out there every day visiting with people. And I think we overcomplicate things and where they're breathing life into people again and they're coming together. And so it's not like it's not happening, but I think there is more of a strategy that's needed that coordinates all these multiple perspectives. But there's so many people out here with good expertise, incredible ideas, and good hearts for it. It's just who's, like, again, that connective tissue. And where we get that, I don't necessarily know, but I would love to be in a big open meeting where someone's like, it's almost, if you think of it like, I don't know, a good Thunderdome, like someone comes through after these discussions and that we can even resource them to do it. We did that in our multi-jurisdictional group with Rachel, right? And she, if not for her, we would have been circling these issues there as well. So it's not perfect, but we need a facilitator that comes forward like that.
Well, and again, I really, really appreciate you coming forward and talking about this really serious issue all across Turtle Island, here in the Twin Cities especially. And I really, really appreciate you. Thank you so much, Nikki.
Yeah. Chimuguich, Bizendawig, appreciate you listening and anyone else who listens. And we need other people to support us. So other communities, even just sharing these issues and not being silent about it is an action. It does help.
Perfect. Hey, great way to end it. We'll be right back. This is Native Roots Radio.
We're two of the very first listeners, and we're still listening to Native Roots Radio.
Hey, right on. Hey, welcome back. This is Native Roots Radio. And, you know, I just want to play with some of these bells and whistles we have here. I'm here with Misko, the producer of Native Roots Radio. And I just want to hear. All right, I'm going to say it again. I'm here with Misko, the producer here. Yes, very good buttons. Hey, thank Misko, you. What a great segment with Nikki. Hard to navigate all these things that are happening, so she kind of simplified it for me. We need a person to overlook and get all the groups together and the boots on the ground, especially with what's happening with our relatives all over the Twin Cities, but all over the Turtle Island, where the homeless and houseless relatives with addiction and not with addiction. We need to help them and really step it up. And I think it was interesting too, Misko, what she said about, you know, we really move fast on the surge, ICE surge here in the Twin Cities. Let's maybe do the same thing again for our houseless relatives. So really interesting way to think about it. I was going to say perspective, but I couldn't say it. So now I'll say it. Interesting perspective.
Yeah, and I think as Native people, a lot of us have, I wouldn't say not everyone has a direct connection to, you know, addiction or homelessness, but I know a lot of us have relatives who deal with those problems, friends, people in the community that we care about, and I think it's just important that we're all aware of what's going on and how we can help out with this situation.
Yeah, speaking of helping out, the Minneapolis Indian Center this Saturday, July 11th at 3:30 to 4:30, again at the Minneapolis Indian Center. U.S. candidate and current Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan and comedian and activist Dallas Goldtooth will be at the center on July 11th for a Native community rally to promote early voting and to ensure Native voices are heard in this election. And it's really big. Misko, I know you were young in these last couple elections, but the Native vote really, really made a difference across a lot of elections all over the country. And so I know two cycles ago, Misko, that organizations up north, like by Red Lake and up that area, signed 9,000 new voters and Native American new voters that never voted before. And that's a huge number, and that can really make the difference in an election.
Yeah, I like to always bring everything back to my own experience and talk about, yes, you know, my growing up as a young person, growing up as a young Native woman, and in my household I've never seen people vote or like even care about anything that's happening in politics. And so I don't know what it is but I first started voting in college, and I think it's super important. I think no matter your political views, I think one thing we can all agree on is that Native voices matter in our communities. And I think just showing up, you know, supporting tribal sovereignty, protecting our treaty rights, and making sure that our voices are represented. And that's why, you know, I do want to invite everyone to the Indian Center on Saturday, July 11th, 3:30 to 4:30, to come in, you know, show support to a Native representative, a Native woman.
Yeah, definitely. And it's interesting you kind of asked why people, our Native relatives, don't vote. We have such a history with the U.S. government that it's not good for us and what they do to us. And we found out maybe in the last 10, 20 years that maybe voting does really help and representation. I've talked about Misko over the years here on Native Roots Radio that, you know, I had a job with the tribe, a political job with the tribe, and I was really kind of in shock how Wisconsin didn't really recognize a lot of the things that Minnesota does. And that's because of our representatives that are representing us and educating other lawmakers. And I don't think I see that much in Wisconsin. So really, that's one of the things that's great. We're on Civic Media, which is all over Wisconsin, and I just want to give them a shout out because, you know, a lot of people check in and listen to our show to see what's going on in Indian country. And I think a lot of our white allies really recognize the plight that natives go through. And that's just one of them, not trusting the government, Misko.
Yeah, and you know, the 4th of July just happened, and that is, what is it, celebrating our independence from Britain as America. But as Native people, we were here long before these treaties were made. This is where our homelands are, where our origin stories come from. And again, it's important for our allies to know that. And then again, for Natives to vote and get their voices heard, because oftentimes I think we think, oh, we're only 1%, 2% of the population, our voices don't matter. But it really does when we all, you know, come together, go out and vote and try to have our voices heard so people understand kind of what we're going through and environmental, you know, issues that need to be addressed.
Yeah, I agree. And I don't know, since the last census, and I think our numbers have gone up, I think people that, and especially, you know, Native people have a history of hiding from the government. And whether it's a removal, like Ho-Chunk had been removed six times, we had a Trail of Tears of our own, and you know, part of the tribe ended up in Nebraska, and then a lot of people came back to the homeland in Wisconsin. So there's places to hide, and so the last census, I believe a lot of people came out of hiding, so to speak, and were engaged in this, and being double citizens of your tribe and of this country. You know, if you don't have a table or a chair at the table, Misko, you're being what's being served on the table. And that's why we need to, if we don't have a chair, pull up a folding chair and get involved and speak your truth. And I believe that's what we try to amplify here on Native Roots Radio.
Yeah, I really appreciate, you know, Native Roots Radio and AM 950 and all the guests that we have on, because again, as Native people in this world, we have to live in two worlds, you know. We have to get an education and survive, you know, navigating the system. But also, we have our own cultural and, like, historical knowledge, the knowledge of the land, the knowledge of our language, the knowledge of our ancestors that we carry on. And so, again, it's kind of hard to navigate those two things. And sometimes it's hard to even, you know, be accepted into any of those worlds, you know, because right. We do have families with addiction and people who are going through their own personal problems. But again, I think we're navigating these two worlds, and I just want to invite more people to be involved in what's happening, you know, that we can have an impact on, such as voting.
And that's an easy one, too, and they're making it easy on us. I know the federal government doesn't want it easy on us. They want to do everything they can to stop us from voting, because the GOP is going to really lose. So we have to come out in numbers that are undeniable. You know, we can't have close elections. We have to have a blue tsunami, and we really need to support people that support people and not corporations. And I think that's one of the things, you know, the guy that's president now, the orange one, he doesn't really care about people. He's just made $2 billion for his family. You know, that's a big, that years ago, he would have been in jail and his whole family would have been in jail. But everyone's complicit that he's gotten to work for him in the government. There is no Department of Justice. There is none of these things that have been stopgap over the year. Hey, Misko, again, I just want to remind everyone, U.S. Senate candidate and current Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flannery and comedian activist Dallas Goldtooth will be at the Indian Center on the 11th from 3:30 to 4:30. Hey, thanks for chiming in, and this has been a great show, and you're a big part of it.
Yep, Gigawabaman, everyone. Thank you all for listening, and we'll see you guys Saturday.
Right on. We'll be back tomorrow. This has been Native Roots Radio. Ho-wa. Let's hear it. Ho-wa.
So Support for KFAI comes from First Avenue, presenting Nick Lowe and Los Straitjackets at the Fine Line Wednesday, July 15th. Nick Lowe is back, and he's not alone. Powered by retro rockers Los Straitjackets, they're touring with their latest release, Indoor Safari. It's a throwback rockabilly album combining Nick Lowe's style and charm with Los Straitjackets' guitar-driven energy. More information about Nick Lowe and Los Straitjackets at the Fine Line is available at first-avenue.com.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot. Hey, welcome back, everyone. This is Native Roots Radio, and I am Robert Pilot, your host, and we are here with our friend, Dr. Stately, CEO and president of Native American Community Clinic. Dr. Stately, I miss you. So glad you're on.
It's been a hot minute.
Yeah. Well, I know one of the things I'd really love to talk to you about is how are things happening at the new clinic? A lot of your energy has been on that lately, and I know you've also been in ceremony too.
Yeah, it's been taking an outsized amount of my energy and time and focus. We are 2 months from opening, or taking occupancy, I guess, is the way I'm being told to describe that. So we're expecting to take occupancy, meaning the city will give us inspectors will give us the right to move into the building on September 9th, which is, you know, just 2 months from this Thursday.
Wow.
So excited about that. Things are moving forward. As if you go by, if you drive past the building now, you're going to see there's no more crane up. Everything that structurally sort of needs to be there is there, like all of the structures there, you know, there's, from the outside looking at the building, you can see that the paneling is going up on the building, and much of the art that's going to be on the outside of the building is there already. There's more to happen with that. I took a walk through the clinic, I think a little over a week or two ago, and it's no longer framing, it's actual walls and doors, mm-hmm. and there's paint on the walls, and there's, so it's,
wow.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing, actually. Like, it just, yeah. you know, knocks me over, actually, sometimes. I'm, like, speechless sometimes.
It's amazing because we've been talking about this, but to me it's amazing. I see it every time I'm on Franklin Avenue, and it's just like all the work that's gone into this and all the work that's going to happen, because the first two floors are the medical center, and then you have four other floors for housing. And man, oh man, do we need that. And we also need a great clinic that you have. So it's going to be a beacon of hope in the community.
Yeah, well, thank you. And yes, you know, we're in the process now of developing our, we're working through our plan for moving in. It's not going to be, we expect that there will be a little bit of slowdown. I think one of the things that people are really excited, it's going to be opening in September. We hope to have our new parking lot established in the back of the new building, which is our existing building. So we got to move into the new building and take everything that we need from that old building, which isn't, we're getting a lot of new equipment and stuff like that. But I think, everyone's going to spend the next month or two packing their things, getting rid [S2] Wow. [S1] Of the stuff. And we just sent an email out to all the staff today, take your personal belongings home, take your art off the walls if you're going to hold on to it and those kinds of things. But it's really intended specifically to start setting the ground level sort of expectations for how everybody individually and collectively need to sort of make this move a priority so that we can get it accomplished and get it done. Our goal is, I know it seems like a really unreasonable goal, and when my operations team talks to me, I'm like, are you sure we can get this accomplished in this way? And they're like, they're confident. We have movers, we have a few shakers and other folks within the clinic, but we're having outside movers help us with a lot of the moving. we hope to move in over the course of the last week of the first week of September, and then over the weekend, and have a soft open. You know, I'm not going to try to conquer the world the first week we open. So we'll have some, we'll probably have a lower number of availability for appointments the first few weeks as people are learning their space and their new desk and their new location. You know, we're crammed into this little tiny building in the middle of, you know, at least the strip mall for the last 20 years. So having, you know, things in different spaces, one department on another floor that used to be on all the same floors, all that stuff's going to take time to navigate and learn. So we're going to give ourselves a little bit of luxurious time at the beginning of the first couple of weeks and then kind of ease into things. But we expect that we'll be fully operational within the first few weeks of moving in.
Wow, that's amazing and good on you. And, you know, time has flown. I can't believe, I mean, it's probably not flown for you, but me just going out like on Franklin Avenue and seeing.
It has a little bit. It has a little bit, you know. I mean, I thought it would take much longer than a year to get this accomplished. I want to remind folks that, and people remind me all the time, like, you know, we just broke ground last May, a year ago May. So.
Wow.
Right. I remember like last May we were like digging up the ground, right? And for the first month or so it was a big hole in the ground, and you know, so
wow,
it's pretty remarkable that we're this far along.
I was eating at a restaurant right next door to it, and I saw the architect. It was really funny, about 2.5 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, kind of admiring his work. He was looking up at the building. I was knocking on the window, but he didn't hear me. But it was funny. It was very cool. I ran into him since, and I said, yeah, I saw you checking out your building.
We're really proud of the building. I think it's like the things, you know, there's a lot of the reasons to be proud of it, but it is going to be like, you know, we, with intention, put a lot of thought and idea and intentionality into sort of like creating a space that felt, you know, deeply Indigenous. You're going to know that you're walking into an Indigenous space. And from even the moment before you even go into the place, right? So, you know, there's going to be medicine gardens around the property. There's going to be, the wolf will be back somewhere. Yes. Over there.
Yes.
And, oh. he or she has been in storage for the last year. Wow. And then we have another sculpture that we're launching, a new bear sculpture that I haven't shown a whole lot of people that sculpture yet. And those two relatives will be at the front of the clinic on on the west side of the clinic. The entry into the clinic is on the west side. Entry to the housing is on the east side, by closer to Aldi. But those two relatives will be at the front doors of the north facing door and then the south facing door. Pretty excited about that because I think it's going to be, you know, it's a good representation of who we are and how we've evolved over the last 10 years under my leadership. You know, the wolf was our signature sort of iconic image for a really long time because it was in the sculpture garden. It was a really big part of who we are. But we redid our bear. We redesigned our bear. We hired a new person. We had an artist, we worked with. We created a new logo. So that bear is the foundation of that bear that's part of our new logo has been the foundation of like the way we think about. So the bear is for us, and also Ojibwe people, represents medicine. Yeah. Mm. Those are things that we've really put into, like, we put a lot of effort into, like, making the space feel like it's, you know, Indigenous and Native specific. We have a strong Dakota footprint in that building, in the lobby, and on both the first floor and the second floor. A lot of really amazing artists have contributed just, like, stellar art, like, just, like, every time I look at it, I am overwhelmed and blown away. But I'm like, just.
Well, you want to take it home, don't you? Want to tear it off the wall.
Well, yeah, yeah. I mean, I would have to actually rip it off the building, but no one's going to be able to take it off that building. It's going to be part of the building.
How excited are the people that work with you for this movie?
Oh, everyone's, I think everybody's really excited. They're really excited, I think, and they're excited to have a new place. I think there's the normal sort of like, I think, you know.
You are listening to Fresh Air Community Radio, KFAI, 90.3 FM, Minneapolis, St. Paul, and around the world at KFAI.org, non-commercial community-powered radio.
Oh, it's bursting with ultrasonic.
Gin and tonic, please.
Oh, it's